And welcome back to This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And it's a very exciting week.
Absolutely. Tons of announcements.
We forgot our party hats.
We did.
Put on our party hats for this week, but let's jump right to it. First and foremost, Windows 8 has officially reached RTM.
That's right. So what this means is a couple dates to remember.
Yes.
So it's RTM now. That means people that actually build machines are getting the RTM, the final version of Windows 8, to be able to build for our general availability GA, which is coming in October.
So the OEMs, people like Dell and HP and so on. So we've created the golden disk, and it's literally golden, right? Very expensive.
I can only hope. Now, for developers, people that we're talking to, August 15th is the magical date for MCN subscribers to be able to get Windows 8.
That's right, and TechNet subscribers as well.
Yes, MCN and TechNet subscribers as well. And I think there's a number of dates within Brandon's post that you can read for folks, for example, that are doing software assurance, have volume licenses, and so on.
Yes.
So lots of cool stuff and exciting.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm running it now.
Yes, so I am as well. Yes, it's Yay. Definitely good stuff. And you can also get it from Dan's BitTorrent feed.
And the store is also open. And we should say Windows Server 2000, the latest version of Windows Server 2012, I guess it is.
Yes.
Also RTM'd, yes, and follows right. the same schedule of availability.
And speaking of RTM,
which brings us to Visual Studio.
Visual Studio 2012 and .NET Framework 4.5 also RTM. So Jason Zander and Soma Sagar have all the details. A couple things to note here. Number one is that we're giving everybody who's an MSDN subscriber a free one-year account to be able to publish to both Windows Phone and Windows 8 stores. So that's really cool. You can sign up for that actually immediately. You can go sign up for that today. And then the other thing that is worth putting on your calendar is September 12th, we're going to have a launch event, and that's going to be an online virtual launch event that you can sign up for and watch throughout the day as we give you deep dive presentations on the whole Visual Studio 2012 set of technologies.
So September 12th, save the date.
That's right.
Cool. So getting to some of the developer news going around. So people that are familiar with using JavaScript for applications probably want to understand how one builds Windows 8 Metro-style applications and uses the WinJS namespaces. So this article walks through, if you're a JavaScript developer or looking at using JavaScript, how do you actually do things like templates and rendering? Mm. So how do I go into the defining a specific type? So a type, you know.
What do we mean by a template, by the way?
Anything that you're, say, binding to. So okay. Let's say, like, a list.
Okay, or so data grid or something like that?
Any control, right? Mm-hmm. Templatable controls.
Okay.
Right, so, you know, how do you define a type? So I'm going to have a person, that a first name, last name, and, you know, an email address.
Got it.
How do you actually do that in JavaScript? How do you then bind to a specific template and do the rendering functions as well? So things that are new for people that haven't used these WinJS libraries, it's a good simple example to for them to understand how everything works.
Got it. That makes sense. It was a little confusing at first. I thought that by templates we were talking about, you know, file new foo being a template.
Yes,
overloaded this, term here.
It is an overloaded term. This is really about the process of how do we create the data.
Yep.
How do we then use these controls and render and display that data?
Right, got
it. So in a list or grid, as you were mentioning.
Okay. And then another story here, we have Matthew Anayan is talking about writing a Visual Studio 2012 unit test adapter. So we've talked about in the past how Visual Studio 2012 opens up extensibility so that you can start to download adapters for third-party testing frameworks like InUnit and XUnit. Of course, we ship out of the box with a Visual Studio unit testing framework, sometimes referred to as MS Test. And we also have a brand new framework for C++ developers as well that allows you to ship to write code in C++ that tests unit tests other code. But sometimes you might want to write your own. Matthew calls it a unit test adapter. I actually prefer to think of it a little bit more generically as just a test adapter that does anything on my code. It might be unit testing. It might be performance testing. It might be end-to-end testing. Really anything that you might have that's a custom test framework.
Whether it has pass-fail.
Yeah, the has-pass-fail. Yeah, you can really plug that right in so that you can either trigger it for every time I build my project I want to run these tests, or every time I explicitly say run all or run a particular category of tests. You can run it straight from the development environment, or you can then take these test adapters and you can deploy them onto your build machine as well. And the nice thing is that they just roll up right alongside all of your existing unit tests, and so...
And this is totally extensible for people to do add-ins. So you could build anything where it's like the Brian Keller This Week on Channel 9 story, and it's pass-fail.
Yes, exactly.
It's every time it's fail.
Yes. But sure, you could do that.
The point is incredibly extensible.
It is. Now, there's one thing worth pointing out is that you may have heard that unit testing support was added to Visual Studio Express. Mm-hmm. Now, the distinction here is that with Visual Studio Express, you get support for the adapters Microsoft ships, including the MS Test adapter as well as the C++ unit testing adapter.
Sure.
You cannot use third-party adapters because that requires add-ons, which Express doesn't support. But for anybody with VS Pro and above, you can get the end unit ones, and you can write your own custom ones and party on.
It's a good distinction to know.
Yeah.
And news to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so our next story is actually Bob Familiar here that does a walkthrough of some of the stuff going on with Windows 8, XNA, and Monogame. And this article isn't super long. It is going to be a multi-part series. But the idea is for people that have applications in XNA or want to use XNA as a framework for developing games mm-hmm. on Windows 8, Monogame is a solution. And the way Monogame works is it's on top of SharpDX, which is on top of native DirectX. So, and it gives you the framework and a number of things to make your game feel like a native Windows 8 application. But the point is, I think there's going to be some folks that have investments and assets and so on, or maybe prefer building applications using an XNA for these rich graphic typed applications.
Okay.
And here's kind of the structure. And there's going to be more articles on this.
Okay.
Too.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it. So if you are new, as I am, to HTML5 and CSS3, this is another great series in the Absolute Beginner series that you guys have over on Channel 9, where Clint and Bob Tabor take you through everything that you need to know as an HTML5 CSS3 developer, right? Anything else to add to this?
Yeah, I mean, it really is Bob doing all the videos just to, you know, make sure that Clint doesn't get any credit.
What does Clint do around here anyway?
What would you say he does here? He writes unit test adapters for himself.
Exactly, yes.
So 20-plus videos, and, you know, it's not, when we say HTML5 and CSS3, this series is designed for non-programmers, and that I think is an important point. If you are an HTML5 guru, this is not the series for you. So
okay.
We go through how tags work, you know, how tables work, and so on. So it really is kind of an overview for HTML and CSS, and we will have another series for just JavaScript.
Okay.
That obviously works well with this as well, and that'll be coming, I think, next week.
So for absolute beginners, I can finally get my mom off my back. She's been begging me for CSS 3 help. So,
yeah, if she wants to build her own HTML website, this is the series we're looking to have people start at.
There you go, Mom. Please stop calling me. I'm just kidding. All right, so Foxy. What is Foxy? This is Firefox and IE, like dogs and cats living together?
Yeah, so the idea here is our friend Ray Bango and Christian Hellman from Mozilla teamed up together to do a web series of how you build modern, standards-based mm-hmm. applications that work and have a great user experience across different browsers. And I think the cool part is, you know, obviously they go through the overview, but they have code samples that they walk through end users. What are some of the ways that you can do and light up and have these features work and do it in a way that is standards compliant?
Right, and how do you test for that and
I love the fact that, you know, it's Firefox and IE happy together and doing a web series. Like, this is awesome.
And they're hanging out at the beach, which is awesome. Good for them. It's nice if you could swing that gig.
Yeah, wait, why don't we do this week on Channel 9 on beaches?
Seriously, I know. I wonder what the poor Chrome evangelist is thinking right now. So moving right along, I love these articles. This is an article that was by Dean Hume where he talks about some hidden gems inside the .NET classes. You know, we've all been programming with .NET, some of us as long as 10 years, and it's always nice to like find things that you didn't even know were there that can help you in the future. And so he mentions a couple of things. One of these is time zone info. So if you need to retrieve a list of time zones along with their names and their abbreviations, it's all in .NET. If you need to retrieve a list of country codes and their ISO codes. That's also all in the .NET framework as well, which I do wonder how they keep that up to date as things are moving around.
But yeah, it's a good question. What happens with Myanmar or Burma, as you like to call it, over time?
Like, right, I do like to call it that.
Yeah, yeah. So how that all happens. But I think it's very cool that just built into the types, you can say, hey, give me a list of countries.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Awesome. Yeah, so I love these things. Somebody should build a collection of all these like things you never knew were in XYZ. So what is factual, Dan?
All right, so factual, it's a collection of data and data as a service. So the idea is whether it's geodata, like, hey, I think they have like 6 million different places in the world. So that would be like, say, you know, cities, counties, provinces,
hold
countries.
On, back up just a little. This is data as a service?
Data as a service.
Okay.
Restaurants.
Okay.
How great is it to have like a restaurant service where you can say, for example, pull up the name of the restaurant and they give you even percentages of like, I think it's like 80% have at least the name of the restaurant, the website and contact information of the restaurant, and then maybe like 70% have the cuisine and some of the other details that they have. So the point is, if I wanted to build an application that was a simple restaurant finder service,
yeah,
I can use this. And the big point is they now have a C# API that okay, allows you to call into this factual service. So check out the factual services. You as a developer want to be able to use some of this geodata, mm-hmm, restaurant data, and they have certainly a lot more than that. You can easily call in for .NET developers. So it's a great thing to just add to your application.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. And we don't know how much it costs to use this. It's probably not a free service.
You'll always have to look at how, you know, what your specific needs are and all that good stuff.
Okay, that's a non-answer. I love it.
Yeah.
Which brings us to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week!
My pick of the week, I don't know if you've signed up for this, but Hotmail actually got a really nice makeover. And our friend Nick Fillingham and his team have been hard at work over there working on this. So if you go to your Hotmail inbox now, I think by default it just all switches over to this new interface that you can go to outlook.com and see this really clean, crisp, fast and fluid UI. And so you can also sign up for an @outlook.com email address as well.
Yeah, so an important point to make, though, mm-hmm, is for people that have Hotmail accounts, don't necessarily sign up for a new account. Look at merging your existing account.
Okay.
So what that would do is take your Hotmail account,
yep,
and create an alias under your new Outlook account. So if you were Bieber fan forever at Hotmail,
as I am,
as you are, and you built Brian Keller at Outlook.com, then you're doing the merge process.
I can still
when
get
you
email
log
to
in,
my
you
Bieber
merge,
account.
It becomes what's called aliases. So that's another cool feature that people don't maybe know about, is you can build a number of aliases under that Outlook.com
right,
to come to you.
Okay.
So say, for example, I have danfernandez.com and I want dan.fernandez.com to come to me. Now what happens is, and this is a feature that doesn't exist yet, is if you went in and built your free signup account and didn't do that merge to move from Hotmail to Outlook, is you can't connect the two yet, and that's certainly feedback that people have been giving.
Okay.
Them. But it's just something to remember.
Right. One thing people do need to be aware of is that if you do switch from your Hotmail account over to an Outlook.com account and you're using Windows Phone, you'll basically have to go through effectively a factory reset to reinstall your apps and set up your data and everything. You won't lose your apps. Anything you've paid for should still be there, but it will be something you'll need to go through, so just be prepared for that.
Good point.
Yep. Which brings us to your pick of the week.
So my pick of the week is from Greg Duncan on the Kind of Fun blog. He found a very cool gadgeteer robot. So this is the Rover 5 platform. And the idea is it has an IR camera, not a Kinect, but same, I think, conceptually similar. And it does object tracking. So there's a video here. So it can do things, for example, like know that there's an obstacle and then keep a certain distance around that obstacle to get around it, for example. So for us as developers that are always interested, the Gadgeteer platform is a great way for people to get used to playing mm-hmm. with applications and deploying applications that are .NET applications, and it makes it really easy, sort of the snap-on Lego parts
right.
for adding new cameras and so on. So it's a cool example for people that are interested in getting started with Gadgeteer.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, we hope you enjoyed this week, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks.